Our legislators have finally limped their way across the finish line for the 86th Texas Legislature. As it comes to a close this week on Texas Scorecard Radio, I sit down with Brandon Waltons and Destin Sinsky of the Texas Scorecard Capital Bureau and break down what happened, what didn't happen, and particularly how the grassroots are reacting to it all. Stay tuned. Welcome back, friends, to this end-of-session spectacular episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas. You can find us on the internet. We're at www.texasscorecard.com. Also find us on all the social media platforms. You can follow me on Twitter, at TweetTonyMac. I sometimes have something, I think is interesting to say. You may think it's interesting, too. For this episode, we're going to do something different. So the Texas legislative session, the 86th legislature, regular session, has come to a close, and there is a lot to cover, a lot to address that taxpayers need to know about. And so I've got Brandon Waltons, Capital Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard.
Hey.
And I've got Destin Sinsky, Capital Correspondent. So the Capital Bureau is here.
Yes, and spectacular. I like calling it that.
It's a spectacular.
Really fun.
Well, I think we'll have some fun, but I think we do want to talk about some of the things, what happened, okay? So what happened in the nature of the legislative session, a lot of things don't really get finalized until the very last few days. So things that happened this session, when did they happen? They happened this week. You know, they've happened in the last week or so.
Right.
What happened? More importantly, what didn't happen? I think there's a lot of that. And how the grassroots are reacting to that. Hint, they're not satisfied. They're not satisfied.
That's right, Tony. I think you know, a lot of the conservative leaders across the state have been pretty vocal just in the closing hours of session about, you know, hey, where's that priority thing that I was following all these 140 days? It's interesting. Over the last week, everything moves through a more hurried pace, obviously, but certain bills move even faster than others, and some are slower.
Sure.
But I think the big takeaway, you know, taxpayers over the past couple weeks saying, hey, property tax relief, where is it? We've got to have it. Step it up. Make us a priority. And I think lawmakers eventually caved, if you will, because I think they were kind of maybe determined not to to afford taxpayers that. But they had to eventually, you know, had their hand forced. And we've got about $5 billion in property tax relief for taxpayers over the course of the next year.
Yeah. And so we'll break down. I want to walk through on the property tax reform and relief side, this whole school finance reform thing. What happened?
Sure.
Does it have any significance? Obviously, the politicians want to say that it is super significant.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to start off this really interesting comments from House Speaker Dennis Bonin in the closing days of the session. Of course, Bonin coming in at his first session as Speaker, replacing outgoing Speaker Joe Strauss, who was, you know, well known as a very liberal Republican, very hostile to the conservative grassroots. Bonin, you know, you thought less so, and so you thought, okay, well, maybe we'll have a different result this session. Mm-hmm. The comments at the end of the session kind of bringing us back home to a bit of hostility there.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you have to go back. First of all, remember, I mean, Dennis Bonin was elected in this new process by the Republican caucus, where the Republican caucus was choosing their own speaker. And so a lot of folks, a lot of Republicans thought, well, great, we finally have our Republican members deciding who's going to lead our legislature.
Basically, we have a Republican speaker as opposed to a bipartisan Democrat-Republican coalition speaker.
Exactly.
Is what you'd had for the last decade.
Exactly. And so that makes his comments to an Austin newspaper in the closing days of session all the more interesting, where he's going on about this Democrat state representative by the name of Joe Moody out of El Paso, and he's telling them, I'm just reading the quote, he says, I think Texas would be very blessed if there was a Democrat majority and Joe Moody wanted to lead the House.
Yeah.
I mean, almost setting the stage for Republicans to lose control of the legislature.
And this is particularly interesting. I mean, the significance from a political standpoint is a lot of conservative grassroots, right, Dustin? They're looking at this session and they're saying, hey, you guys needed to deliver something that would motivate Republican voters going into 2020. You need to deliver on promises if we want to continue to have Republican control in the state. And there's a general sense out there, I think, of saying you didn't do enough.
Sure.
And we're now at risk, and we may have a Democrat House in 2021. We may have more Democrats in the Senate. We may lose significant numbers of seats and have, you know, an actual, not just in fact, but on paper, purple state where you have Republicans and Democrats, you know, jockeying for positions of power. We may have that, and you've got the Speaker basically saying, oh, well, we'd be blessed to have that and to have this gentleman, Joe Moody, be the Speaker of the House.
Yeah, so two things. I think, excuse me, I think the first thing is you got to go back to what we were just talking about, how Bonin was elected. So at the beginning of session, conservatives, you know, so have such a bitter taste in their mouth about former Speaker Strauss and just the way that everything was handled in the Texas House in the sessions past. And so the expectation is that anything could be better than where we were, right? And so then you have Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, Governor Abbott, Bonin, all, you know, rolling out this, feeling of encouraging each other, working together.
Kumbaya session,
right? And so I think everybody's expectations were just that, wow, you know, this is the time where our issue, whether it's Second Amendment issues or life issues or fiscal responsibility or, you know, fill in the blank, everybody was like, this is going to be the time where we can really have a breakthrough session and deliver and give people something to talk home about and talk to their neighbors about, you know, ahead of 2020. And I think, you know, having seen how everything played out, the knee-jerk reaction of a lot of grassroots leaders is disappointment, you know, that promises were made and expectations were set too high. And then you get this, you know, nasty, everything kind of languished just like it has in sessions past, and people are frustrated. And then the second thing I want to talk about is, you know, Moody is a veteran lawmaker, a top lieutenant of the new Speaker, Dennis Bonin. I think what we see here in these comments is, one, we recognize that we didn't give people a whole lot to talk about on the campaign trail. So what are we going to do in response? We got to hedge ourselves, the leadership, Austin, the people that are running the show in the Capitol. Who could be our guy to kind of carry the mantle for the establishment?
Who is our Democrat
right,
to lead a Democrat House when, you know, if that transpires? Because I think they think what you're saying is they think that's a real possibility.
Absolutely.
And they're preparing themselves for that. Now let's switch gears here. You know, I don't want to spend the whole time talking about personality. I want to talk about what happened.
Yeah. Sure.
What happened, what didn't happen. So let's go to the top line. The biggest things that did happen are on the front of this property tax reform, property tax relief.
Right.
And then, of course, school finance reform, which, as we've been talking about all session, reform means change. Change to what? I don't think it changed all that much, but
right.
Let's run through this, because this is what all of these politicians will be talking about on the campaign trail, saying we did big things. These were the biggest landmark things ever, and they arguably, you could say, good things or mixed bag things.
Sure.
Not as big, I think, as they want to make them out to be. But let's start with the property tax stuff.
And I think it's when you put it in the context, too. I mean, when we started off this session, property tax reform / relief, a big priority, not only of conservative grassroots and taxpayers and Texas, but you know, vocally a priority of Governor Abbott, Speaker Bonin, and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. I mean, they were out there in the first few weeks of session talking about their unified plan to tackle property taxes. But what you actually saw was, you know, the legislature did eventually pass a bill, this property tax reform bill, the Senate Bill 2, that places these voter approval triggers, basically. If a taxing entity wants to raise their revenue more than 3.5%, then they have to go get voter approval for that. This is the legislation we've been following all session long. Now, the big question was, okay, this is great. This is a much-needed reform, but...
Yeah, and what you see in polling out there is voters, I mean, Republican, Democrat, any type of voter.
Everybody
supports it. And in fact, they think, hey, if you're going to raise property taxes at all, come get my permission.
Come get my permission. Put it on the ballot. Exactly. You can raise property taxes, but get my permission first. Ask me first. Big fight all session long to get that done. But what the bigger fight, kind of behind the scenes, I think more so, was how the legislature was going to deliver on the relief portion. And so we had talked about property tax reform, these voter approval triggers for asking before raising rates. But that obviously, and to their own admission, not going to lower any Texans' property tax bill.
It's about limiting the growth of property taxes, not actually reducing them.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people looked at this session and said, you know, if we're going to be successful here, this is not going to be a success unless Texans look at their property tax bill in 2020 and it's lower than it was in 2019.
Right.
And so that portion ends up getting rolled in to this omnibus, they call it a school finance reform bill. I kind of taken more to calling it just a school spending bill, not a whole lot of reform per se.
Yeah, it basically, yeah, and let's talk about that for a second. So again, we're talking, we want to get to the issue of the property tax relief component, but they put this into a bill dealing with school spending. Yep. And you had all kind of different proposals. Hey, we want to pay teachers more. We want to incentivize this program and that program, this little feature, that little feature. There were changes in the funding formulas for schools where you're, you know, mm-hmm. there's certain base allotment that comes from the state. And at the end of the day, you basically, what they're saying is what we went from like 35% to 42% of school spending is supposedly going to be coming from the state. That's
right.
That's the plan, at least. So that did change. But basically, the major features of our school finance formula, they doubled down on the basic mechanisms. You doubled down on financing it through local property taxes. Yep. You doubled down on financing it through this Robin Hood redistribution scheme.
Right, the recapture.
And in fact, you were there at the press conference, Speaker Bonnet, saying, well, we have to have it.
Right, yeah.
We can't do away with that.
So that was a confession, if you will. It was the first time that we had heard one of the big three say, you know, hey, this huge expectation that we're going to move away from this socialistic recapture, redistribution of taxpayer money from property-rich districts, property-poor districts, we're not actually going to scrap that or move away from that.
We're never doing away with
that. And Bonin going as far as saying, we can't.
Yeah.
He says that, you know, an equitable system is something we need, which is a word used by the judge that, you know, brought down a ruling that said, hey, we need to reevaluate how we're funding our schools. But it was just kind of an interesting thing because it was something that we hadn't heard from the big three before, where they're kind of walking back that commitment to moving away from the unpopular Robin Hood system.
Especially when so many politicians, it's been so easy for so many politicians to just say, at least give lip service to being, hey, we're going to eliminate Robin Hood someday. For him to come out there and say, we ain't ever going to do it.
Yeah.
Very, very surprising words there.
Here's the biggest school finance reform bill in decades as they're touting it. And we're not going to tackle the number one thing that I think people would like to see changed in school finance.
So at the end of the day, you basically have an additional $6.5 billion spent on schools for various programs in various ways to do various things, basically tinkering with the existing system of financing schools. In that, they put in $5 billion. It was originally 2.7.
Yep.
And, you know, the grassroots, hey, we want more. We're opposed to this sales tax increase that we were talking about a few weeks ago. And they come back and the final compromise is, hey, we've doubled that to five.
And
that is great that it doubled, but that's in the context there. What is that going to do? Or what can we maybe expect?
So Tony, you got to, you know, we've talked about this all session. It's initially $9 billion, now closer to $10 billion in surplus revenue available to lawmakers.
That they overtaxed us with.
Right. This is money they didn't need to fund the government they set up last session, essentially. And so now they've got all this extra money that they're anticipating coming in. And instead of giving it back to taxpayers, the whole session they seem, you know, absolutely hell-bent on spending it on growing government. And eventually taxpayers, you know, speak up loud enough and are finally heard and brought, you know, up the priority list of people worth considering this session, competing with all the special interests in the cities and counties and all the other people, the loud voices in the Capitol. And you get, just over $5 billion, which is, you know, roughly half of the $10 billion surplus. And that was a nice, you know, departure from what we had seen throughout session, where they were kind of battling having to, you know, appropriate that money back.
So the way I see it, Brandon, you look at this proposal. So this money, this $5 billion, gets given to local governments, and they force the schools to lower their property tax rates accordingly. And so this is supposed to give Texans an actual property tax cut
right.
in the next year. And then the question is, okay, does that cut go away rapidly mm-hmm. because of the ability of local governments to increase taxes over time? And so then that gets into the reform portion. And I guess to me, I look at it, I said, I don't know how long this is going to hold. Will it last? Will it perform where the bills go down and then stay down? It seems like you're gonna have a dip like we had back in 2006, last time they did stuff on this. You're gonna have a dip for a year, and then okay, is it gonna last a year? Is it gonna last 2 years?
Right. Maybe 3 years? Reform measures for those voter approval rates are sort of the counter argument to that. I mean, that is their mechanism to at least try to keep those dips down as long as they can. Notably, school property taxes, school districts, who of course comprising the majority of a Texan's average property tax bill, they're going to be subject to a different mechanism. They're actually going to be subject to a 2.5% cap. The rub there is that lawmakers are not implementing that until 2021.
So you're going to have a gap there. So
yeah.
Okay, let's increase taxes as quickly as possible until we suddenly have to tighten the belt. So we'll see. I mean, I think the big answer here is we don't know. We'll see what kind of impact this has over the next couple of years, and people will look at their property tax bills and know. But taxation's only one side of things. Obviously, spending is the other part of it.
Sure.
So let's talk a little bit about the budget that passed. Lots of disappointment, I think, with the top end lines on this. And the most amazing thing, even with Speaker Strauss, the last two sessions, very hostile liberal Republican speaker, you had the budget the last two sessions stay under this conservative Texas budget limit. It basically said we weren't going to grow the budget more than population and inflation. And it looks like the budget that is passed this session blows way, way past that.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about this is, you know, everybody in the two sessions prior, you know, two sessions ago, different, economic situation for the state, right, where you're almost forced to have to, you know, be very conscious about how much money you're spending. Last session, they seemed committed to that same thing with, conservatives being very vocal from the outset, right at the beginning of session, saying that is one of our top priorities, is making sure we do spend within the constraints of the conservative Texas budget. But this session, I think right out of the gate, they knew that, with Comptroller Glenn Hager rolling out this $10 billion surplus, that man, there's so much money here. There's so many priorities that we want to address, and this, that, and the other. They right out of the gate ruled that out with both budgets. The Senate version, the Senate version initially coming just under by the skin of its teeth. The House exceeding the conservative Texas budget, and then it became the narrative of, can we revisit the budget, bring spending back in, and keep that tradition from the two sessions
past. Let's talk about the numbers. The budget that passed. How far over the limit? We're something like $10 billion?
So the budget is going to be $250 billion. It's going to be somewhere between 12.5%, which
12%.
Exceeds the rate of inflation and population growth, which is around 8%, Tony.
Okay, so that's the deal.
So 50% more than the rate of population and inflation is the big takeaway.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about the things that didn't happen, the big priorities that didn't happen, and kind of what the lawmakers are doing to defend, maybe we didn't need to do those things, whatever, and the grassroots reaction, because I think that's very interesting. I'll be back in a minute.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Now I wanted to talk about what didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And I think for that, really the best place to look is at the top five legislative priorities of the Republican Party of Texas. You have obviously a complete Republican dominance in the state of Texas still through this session, maybe a little less than in the past, but still effectively the same thing. You would expect that these priorities of the Republican Party would be the things that would be debated and moved and passed through the legislature.
You would expect that. Unfortunately, this session, you would largely be wrong. So when we're talking about these Republican Party of Texas priorities, these are what grassroots delegates to the Republican Party of Texas's convention back last summer all voted, all agreed, I mean, huge numbers, that these were the big priorities that they want lawmakers to work on. So
Of 90% approval by the delegates, by the way.
So let's go down the list. There's five of these. So number one here, the passage of constitutional carry. That's licenseless carry of guns. That one shot down, for lack of a better word, I guess, pretty quickly.
Killed by Speaker Bonin, but also not really filed in advance in the Senate either. So
correct.
Bill
in the Senate.
It's killed with fanfare. You see the killing of the bill over on the House side. You don't see the killing of the bill on the Senate side. Same result, though. It's not advanced in either chamber.
Exactly. Number two, passing legislation to abolish all forms of taxpayer-funded lobbying and ending automatic payroll deduction of union dues by the government. So the first part of that, taxpayer-funded lobbying, we did see Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick make this a priority in the Senate. They passed out a bill by Senator Bob Hall. A bill in the House, that bill, when it went over to the House, actually reached the floor for a vote, and Lawmakers voted it down. I mean, yeah, the Republican legislature voted the bill down.
Always kind of in the pocket of the lobbyists, so they were for it. But then there was a significant portion of Republican lawmakers, and you can go. We've got it up at TexasScorecard.com. It'll be on the Fiscal Responsibility Index as well. That vote very clearly. Hey, here's where people lined up, and overwhelming support for this bill from grassroots. You know,
Texans. 88-90%, depending on the poll. I mean, a lot of Texans are against this. The second part of that priority, the automatic payroll deduction of union dues by the government, ending that practice, that was not filed in either chamber, actually. Number three, you had pro-life reforms like the heartbeat bill or abolition of abortion.
Prenda being a top priority for a lot of the life organizations.
None of those, some of those bills being filed in the House, none of them making their way.
Yeah, let's talk about this. You know, one of Bonin's comments, and we skipped over this earlier, was, that whole Texas Right to Life, largest pro-life organization in the state, they'll never be satisfied with us, so we don't even listen. So that total admission.
Yeah, we could pass every pro-life bill, they wouldn't be happy.
They passed none of them. How happy are they now?
So let's talk about real quickly, what did they do? They're going to be out there saying, oh, we did pro-life legislation. We did this Born Alive Act. Okay, so it's tinkering around the edges of a bill of law we already had that deals with not, murdering infants after they survive an abortion, does nothing to curtail abortion.
Right.
So that's the one that's probably top headline. There was another bill that says local cities can't give leases and free gifts and stuff to Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, basically, kind of narrowly tailored to some specific.
But they grandfathered in the existing one. So they'll say, oh, look, we've defunded Planned Parenthood. They always say every session, we defunded Planned Parenthood. Well, they defunded Planned Parenthood a little more, kind of.
Yeah.
But they still left some stuff on the table. So those were the big bills that passed. In the meantime, you're seeing other states across the the country
leading on this
leading
issue,
on this issue, banning abortion.
To the Supreme Court. Yeah.
So
Texas will not be in that fight.
A lot of disappointment there. Let's keep going through the list.
Yeah, number four, abolishing the maintenance and operation property tax. I mean, maybe they get some fraction of partial credit, I guess, for the property tax reform
for
and
slowing
relief,
the growth.
But nowhere close to real discussions about abolishing property taxes.
I think the proof will be in the pudding there. People are going to look at their property tax bills over the next few sessions or next few years, and they're going to say, okay, and maybe it's going to go down this next year, and then does it stay down or does it immediately go up? And you'll see whether this was.
And one last thing on that, Tony, I saw something from a conservative senator's office yesterday that suggested that what we had done with property tax relief might give a $250,000 home $200 in relief. It's important to remember a lot of folks' property taxes have gone up by more than $200 last year, the year before. So anyway, interesting thing
could,
I thought
could
I'd
be
plug
a
in there.
Momentary speed bump on the path to higher taxes. Well, last item.
Protecting religious freedom and privacy. Talking about, you know, men in women's bathrooms and stuff. That was not filed in either chamber.
Yeah, Republicans had no interest in touching that with a 10-foot pole.
And religious freedom legislation, the closest thing we got that lawmakers are going to tout on the campaign trail, no doubt we'll see mailers on it, was this so-called Save Chick-fil-A bill, Chick-fil-A being the Georgia-based, massively successful fast food restaurant, a very narrowly tailored bill that doesn't really do a whole lot.
Yeah. Okay. So these are the things that passed that we're going to hear politicians talking about out there. They're very defensive right now, saying, oh, man, we did amazing things. We got a seat at the table. But it sounds like the grassroots just simply just aren't buying that.
Yeah, I think lawmakers sensing the frustration of grassroots leaders and voters and constituents back home trying to kind of get out ahead of the narrative, right? Yeah, so, you know, if we say, for instance, I saw something out of, a senator's office yesterday saying that the budget was inside the conservative Texas budget, which is blatantly false. And so you already see these politicians, you know, ready to have to go home and talk to these voters about what they did in Austin, willing to even lie and mislead people about what they've accomplished to get ahead of what is obviously going
to
be.
And to be fair, I think it's numbers and politicians aren't that bright, so I don't know that it's lying. I think sometimes
is that the benefit of the doubt or not?
That's the benefit of the mass confusion over what the numbers mean.
Yeah.
I thought former state rep Matt Rinaldi's comments were really interesting. This is one of the most conservative guys. He was wiped out in the Democrat sweep up in Dallas County this last election. And you had some of the his former Freedom Caucus colleagues saying, oh, man, we got a seat at the table, and we really delivered. And Matt saying, well, we didn't have a seat at the table before, and we got a lot more done without that seat than we did with it.
Sanctuary cities, two budgets that cut the real per capita size of government, pro-life victories, dismemberment, abortion ban. I mean, the list goes on. You look at what you get when you don't have a quote unquote seat at the table. And now a lot of those same people that were in those fights, I mean, 2-4 years ago, now on there trying to mislead their supporters, their constituents about their time in office, and basically couching it in this, well, hey, at least we had a seat at the table.
Yeah, I think, you know, so they wanted to have a different strategy, a different approach, new speaker, you know, is this going to be someone we can work with? And I think what they found out is that, you know, the so-called seat at the table just left them in the same position they were before, but without the fight at the back mic to be able to move, you know, things through the process and bring it to the public eye.
All right. So that's what happened. Okay. We know that people are not satisfied. We don't think that what's done was very impressive. So what's the answer, Brandon, as we're wrapping up here? I mean, I don't like to leave people with, you know, the politicians aren't very good. And, you know, so we kind of shrug our heads and walk off. What can people be doing to respond to this?
Well, you can always run for office. That's an option. You know, need some fresh blood, I think, in there. And I think as, you know, your state representative or as your state senator is going around and doing town halls, doing campaign events, talking about their record, I think folks need to be asking them, look, why did you fail to deliver on these Republican priorities? And let them know that's not acceptable.
Yeah, we need to know what they're going to do differently if they want to get reelected. I mean, that's the real question there. Thank you guys for joining me for all your reporting this session. There will be plenty to cover in the interim.
Yeah.
And we'll be back with another another regular episode next week. Thanks for listening.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.